Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode here on the Partner Exclusive Podcast with Anabaptist Perspectives. I'm in the studio again with Myron Eby and Marlon Summers. We just did another episode where we were talking some about the series we did over on our main channel on internet filtering, accountability, Mennonites only using half the internet, that whole package of things. So if you haven't watched those, it might be helpful context to go check those out first. So we got a lot of feedback, a lot of comments on that particular series. And there's a comment here from someone with a handle called New Birth. So we don't know their name, but they left this comment on episode 169. It's called "Why Do Some Mennonites Only Use Half the Internet?" And I'm not going to read all of it because it's pretty long, but then I'll read this and be really curious what you guys think of this. So this is what this person says. "I appreciate the talk. The topic seems to be, are we off the world or are we a bit of the world? It's also seems like grappling with what kind of spoon do we use to eat the poison soup we feel necessary to eat? A big spoon for a faster death or a small spoon for a slower death? Not once have I heard any words of Jesus on this topic come up, so you probably have already lost the battle." And then there's a bunch more, and I'll just cut towards the end, the last paragraph this person writes, and they say, "We might look at the internet the same way as a city, streets and businesses and people. We choose what and where to go and what businesses to enter and do business with or not, and who to talk to and who not. Our purpose is to proclaim the kingdom of God and warn others to turn from their sin, so our activity on the street and commerce of our mission field, but not our playground. It's Satan's kingdom." So that's interesting. I'd really love to hear what you guys think of this person's comment.
So I don't know how Myron, how you feel like these episodes were framed. The suggestion I hear in the comment is something like, well, the framing is, you know, the internet in general is evil, so we just need to take little bites of the evil. I don't think you would have wanted to frame it quite that way. You'd have said there's lots of things out there that are evil, but it wasn't like, well, we need to get a little bit of evil as much as we need to get, I assume. Would you say your goal was we need to get good things while avoiding evil things rather than get small doses of evil?
Yeah, the premise going into the episode was not that all of the internet is evil and so, you know, we're required to be there, we need to be there, and so we're slowly dying by taking a little bit of this. The way I view it is really much the way that this person ended this long comment, where the internet is kind of a virtual city, so to speak, with different streets and shops and people there. And yes, we should be judicious and walk circumspectly, so to speak, in what parts of the city we go to, who we interact with and do business with and choose to hang out with. Are we sitting down with these people? Are we standing over here? Are we sitting in the city gates? Really, the premise that I was going into on this episode was that the internet has some benefits. There are legitimate uses for it. It can be a tool. And yes, there are things out there that we don't want to have exposure to and we want to be careful with. And that's what we're talking about in these episodes, is how do we keep it as a tool? How do we maintain that posture and that vigilance without the contamination and the poisonous soup, as this person refers to it? So I don't view it as using a large spoon or using a small spoon. I view it as, okay, we'll keep going with the soup analogy, I guess. We have this big pot of soup. Maybe there's something in there that's, maybe there's shards of glass in the soup. Yeah, we want to strain those out. But that doesn't mean that the soup doesn't have any nutritious value or any use.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I was kind of trying to figure out how this person got to this spot too, where I don't remember you framing the episode that way, that this thing's all just poison, you know. But doesn't that come back to the larger conversation around internet filtering, accountability. That was more addressed in some of the other episodes we did, because we did three on this. Am I tracking there properly, or do you want to add anything on that front? Like, how do we strain the glass out of the soup, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what this series in part was grappling with, is okay, how do we deal with these things that we know are evil, and just like a city, you know, has sections of town that are probably wise to stay out of. The internet's the same way. The thing with the internet, though, is most content's only one click away, right? Like, the chance, if you're walking down a street in a city, you're not all of a sudden going to jump over 10 blocks and be in the slum section or in the red light district of the city. Online, it feels like, maybe this is a bad analogy, I don't know, but it feels to me that it's probably easier to accidentally end up there. And so some of these things like filtering and accountability provide value, kind of like a guardrail on a road, okay? Hopefully you don't need them. The point is not to drive down the road rubbing against the guardrail, you know, because that's keeping you on the road. That's not what it's there for. It's there to prevent injury in the case of a crash or something going wrong. And so, yeah, again, back to this poison thing and this being. Another thing they mention is being, whether we're of the world or whether we're, you know, just a little bit of the world. The printing press was technology. Our cars are technology. Like, how do you define technology? How do you decide what is a tool and what isn't? To me, there have been some really powerful and good things that have come as a result of the last 20 years of technological advance. And yes, there are some challenges and some issues. Fallen humanity has taken that and has shifted it and used it for evil. Yes, but that doesn't mean that it's all evil. There are still pockets of value. There are redeemed people there spreading Christ's message. I mean, we have examples all the time here at Anabaptist Perspectives of people who have come across us and, oh, wow, this really makes sense, how you guys explained it, or how can I find a church? Or, you know, there are connections like that that have been incredibly valuable. And I don't think this is a case of the end justifying the means. I don't view it that way. I think there's legitimate value in the internet itself. Anyway, I'm rambling now, but I think there's value there. I don't view it all as poisonous. I think we do well to take some precautions there.
Yeah. I mean, you need to find wise ways to deal with it. Maybe a comment on the end here. So it compares the internet to a city, and then the commenter says, our purpose is to proclaim the kingdom of God and warn others to turn from their sin. Okay, very good. So our activity on the street and commerce is our mission field, but not our playground. It's Satan's kingdom. And I'm not sure that I'm ready to go that far. Okay, like, yes, the world system is dominated by Satan. That's a basic biblical theology. But as I listen to this comment, it almost feels like you're taking it further and saying something like, Satan owns public spaces. I mean, even just the metaphor there of not our playground. So were we all supposed to have our own big backyards and church house playgrounds and keep our children there? Like, to me, like, it is actually, just to take that metaphor literally, it is actually important that we show up in public playgrounds and not write that off as the world's dominion just because it's a shared public space. So I guess I'm thinking about this broader picture of how are we defining the world. Like, the earth is still the Lord's.
Oh, that's so interesting, though, because that whole, the earth is the Lord's, like, I don't know, though. It feels like some people would push on that pretty hard and be like, well, no, we need to cloister ourselves away as much as possible and not let anything in and go live in the middle of nowhere or whatever. I don't know, whatever it might be. There's plenty of groups that would lean that way. I wonder if this person is of that disposition or I don't know. It's an interesting thing. Maybe we're getting a little off topic perhaps, but it's worth
noting.
Just
my little point to push back.
I think one of the challenges as time and technology have moved on and advanced is there becomes maybe greater nuance into what is a good use of it and what's not. Okay. A wheel. Okay. Very basic technology. You know, is that going to be on a farmer's wagon or is that going to be on a chariot and used for violence? Okay. So there we have an object that's getting used one way or another. The printing press, we can print the Bible or we can print other things that aren't God honoring. The internet, in some ways, is far more expansive than any of those just, you know, physical objects. And so I think that's maybe where some of this challenge comes in communicating these things and even thinking about these things and talking with people, engaging with questions like this is, okay, what is our fundamental view of what the thing is and what it's capable of and what it should be used for? And, you know, 500 years ago, if you didn't want to use a wheel, like, okay, you're just going to walk somewhere. If you didn't want to, not everybody had a printing press. It seems like now the internet is really part of the fabric of society. So how do you work with that? How do you deal with something that is I'm not going to say it's a necessity for life because I don't view it that strongly either. And there, the people that would advocate against any internet use would say that, and there are ways that in which they try to live that way to some degree of success, I guess.
I think the wheel comparison is actually really important there because the same way the wheel has been woven into the fabric of society for most of us because of the fact that our food distribution, you know, we don't grow all our own food locally. We don't limit it to what can be packed. For most part, especially for those of us that live in rural America, many of us are 10 miles away from places we routinely need to get to function. And if you're in Western America, you might be 50 or 100 miles away from the places you buy your food and the places you go to church. And like the wheel is absolutely indispensable. Now, you can get around it if you live in a large enough city. Then you could walk everywhere. But only because lots of other people have used wheels to bring lots and lots of things into that city and build it so that you can live there with hardly a wheel. And like the internet's the same way. Is woven into society, you can find places to live without it. But they're almost at this point. Yeah, if you're living without the internet, you're just as dependent on the internet as the person living in the middle of New York City is dependent on locomotives and trucks and internal combustion engines, even though they might not own a single one of them themselves. Like, it just becomes part of that fundamental infrastructure of society. And I mean the wheelchair, well, let's just run with this analogy a little bit because, you know, internet's getting built into appliances and so on where you have smart appliances and diagnostics and Wi-Fi thermostats. Well, in the same way, the wheel is not just the, you know, the visible thing you see on a car. Like the wheel is the whole principle of a gear. Any kind of engine, any kind of electric motor, that whole wheel and axle rotation. And, you know, the internet's the same way. They just, okay, I'm getting off into off into nerd land here. But, you know, these fundamental technologies just become integrated into the whole very basic infrastructure of society.
So what's the, there's a field in philosophical thought of rebellion against these things. What's it called? It starts with the letter L, but I can't remember it. Where they like disown the internet, modern inventions.
Luddites. I assume it's named after Mr. Ludd, but I don't know anything about him.
The Luddites, yeah. Is this a little bit of what we're dabbling with, where some people are look at internet as, because it is so pervasive and ubiquitous within society, well, we don't want to be part of mainstream society, so therefore it's got to go. Like, I don't know if that's some of the underlying assumptions here. It is interesting to me, though, because it does seem a lot of the comments, and you can listen to the other episode we just finished recording on this, but it just seems like a lot of the comments being made were just these really broad stroke, you know, it's all bad. Like, we can't, there's no black, like, it's all black and white. There's no middle ground here. And when it's something so baked into the fabric of society and the way life works, that seems, I'm not sure we have that luxury anymore. I don't know if I'm making any sense here. I'm just throwing more stuff into the pool, I guess.
I think people would push back, people with this view would push back and say, oh, well, it's indispensable now because you've given in. Like, you're acculturated now. Yeah. And so that's one of the sticking points when you try to talk about this. We can look at it and say, okay, for all intents and purposes, the internet is here to stay. It's become a part of daily life for any modern civilization. And it just is going to be part of life moving on. And other people who don't feel that way are going to say, or may say, well, no, it's all evil, and you've given up that fight, and you're just decided to be part of it and go with the flow.
So back to Marlon's thing, though, of the people who are saying no to it, which is fine if they, you know, they have the freedom to do that, but that's because other internet infrastructure is allowing for their lives to continue work or something like that, for that to continue functioning, which is something I just never thought of. That was an interesting point. But I guess that doesn't, I don't know if that's super relevant to someone's personal choice.
Well, I think it can be, though, because one of the things that in my line of work I occasionally hear of is somebody who has taken a stand against using the internet and probably taken that stand because they view the internet as evil, something that shouldn't be used. But then those people occasionally, and I'm not saying this is widespread, but there are people who they take a personal stand against using the internet, but they will ask somebody else to look something up or do something for them. So it's, you have this liaison, this middleman who's doing something. So I've decided I don't want internet, but I need to file my taxes and I need to e-file them. And so I'm going to take my tax return over to Marlon and say, Marlon, can you file my taxes for me online? Because that's the way modern society works. It's a requirement to e-file, right? So I'm still asking somebody else to use the internet. I'm still benefiting or needing that in some way. And so if you want to hold that position that the internet is all evil and you shouldn't use it, but yet you are willing to ask somebody else to do something that's related to using the internet, I'm not quite sure how you resolve the inconsistency there as a Christian of, you just ask somebody else to expose themselves to evil on your behalf. And that doesn't, to me, feel like caring for your brother or sister. I don't know. Maybe you have some response to that, Marlon, but that's the cognitive dissonance that I face when somebody has that mindset. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like a very tenable position to me.
Well, right. If you're going to say this is pure evil or evil, then yeah. Case closed, kind of. But I think there's a lot of room for, you know, using those kinds of things as, you know, just more pragmatic. Like, no, I'm not planning to set up an internet connection, but hey, we'll have people that make a business of handling e-file taxes and things like that. I don't think that's inconsistent if it's a pragmatic thing. If you're going to make a principal statement like this is evil, then yeah, it's inconsistent, right? For sure. You know, same way, like, yeah, there's a lot of reasons to limit the use of the wheel, especially when it comes to using wheels to have a life that is all commuting about in noisy machines and, you know, not being close to the people close to you. So, you know, known people who might deliberately live in town and use public transport where somebody else owns the wheel and just do a lot of walking. A lot of respect for that. It makes a lot of sense.
But a more realistic scenario then is not on the principle of internet is evil, but the one I've run into is a lot of, well, ignorance is bliss. Like, we don't really know what to do with this. We're just going to ignore it. And we're just like, we're not even going to try to untangle it because it's too complicated and confusing. I have a number of friends that were raised in homes that were like that, which worked for a time until the children grew up. And then suddenly they get a computer for the first time or a smartphone and they don't even know what to do with it. Like, what even is this thing? And that seems to me almost like we don't really have that luxury. And that strikes me as a much more likely scenario where people aren't actually properly even facing this challenge and saying, okay, like we have to figure something out here. Like, we can't just ignore it. We can't just say, oh, it's all bad. Like, we were talking about that, like, as a principal, just saying it's evil seems pretty untenable. Like, I don't know. Yeah, respect if that, you know, some people would hold that position, it seems a bit extreme. But then the other side is just like, well, we don't know what to do with it. We're just going to kind of ignore it and it'll work itself out. Seems just as out of touch, or it seems like the other extreme ditch that also isn't function. I don't know. Am I getting close to something? I just thought of this. So, yeah.
Yeah, on one ditch, you're calling it all evil. On the other ditch, you're not even willing to analyze or recognize some of the dangers that might be there. And I don't think either spot is a healthy place to be. I don't think you should just say that the soup is all poisonous. And if the packaging says this soup contains glass, you shouldn't just drink it all either. I don't know. This allegory is falling apart.
No, that's actually pretty good though. Cause like, there are some people when it comes to the internet and you just kind of ask them, they're like, oh, I don't know. It's everything's fine. We just kind of, whatever. It's like, wait, you know, like hold on. And then they're like, nah, let's just ladle out some more of that soup. You know, I mean, it's fine. I've definitely ran into people like that. And that always struck me as kind of just head in the sand or something, as if it's like they couldn't take the time to care to think it through. I don't know if that, yeah. And maybe I'm pulling the conversation off a different direction, but there are just the point of these podcasts and what we release is just there are so many different opinions and ways of doing some of this stuff, but it feels like a conversation that's got to happen. You know, we can't just assume it's all going to be fine.
Yeah, well, that's actually a perfectly general point, though, if we think about especially parents or community leaders or whatever. If we just ignore questions because we don't quite know what to do with them and we know there's some bad things and some good things, so we're just not going to deal with it, we really set our children up to get blindsided by it when they get a little older. I think that goes for almost anything. But now, my parting shot, I guess. So, Krista, if you're listening, I guess you can go online and find a picture of soup and use some technology to superimpose a warning over it that says contains glass.
That would look great on our website. Yes.
Somehow I don't think you're going to find that picture in a book somewhere to use.
Might have to use, you know, Dolly 2 to generate it or something. Wow. Well, good stuff, guys. Yeah. Lots of different ways to slice this. This was helpful. I learned a lot. I'm not going to think about wheels the same way again, Marlon. That was pretty interesting. So yeah, any closing thoughts from any of y'all? Anything more you want to add in response to this comment?
I'm probably overusing this soup analogy, but I'm going to make one more with the wheel. We can cut this out later if we want to. But like Marlon talked about a wheel, like, okay, you're dependent on a wheel somewhere in your life. If you live in a city, you might walk, but if you take a bike or you take the subway, like there are wheels involved there. If you take an escalator, there's a wheel inside somewhere. Like, to me, this size of the spoon eating this poisonous soup, to me, feels like the equivalent of saying that wheels, there are car crashes, wheels kill people, and so we shouldn't use any wheels. Or is it a question of whether we're using cars because they go fast? We shouldn't use cars, but we can use bikes because we'll die slower. Like, you know, it's a sort of, I don't know.
Yeah.
It feels like all wheels are evil, but we can maybe use bikes or horse and buggy because those are slower. But anything modern like a car or an airplane or a bullet train or something, you know, we shouldn't use those because they'll kill you faster.
Yes. Let me add here, though, I didn't bring this up before, but I do have respect for, definitely have respect for a classic, you know, classic Amish or Mennonite case for the horse and buggy, where what it rests on is, you know, basically not wanting to fragment community. And the idea that building a life where you just have routine long commutes across long distances, you know, is a bad idea. I have respect for that argument. You know, especially if somebody is willing to carry that through consistently. And that doesn't actually mean you can't hire a driver to go on a trip every once in a while. If you're hiring a driver every week, that undermines it for sure. But if it's actually built on, and I think in some Amish and Mennonite communities it is, it's like, no, here, we've got our communities, we've got our farms, and yeah, because what the car does is lets you almost totally disconnect your social life from where you live. Because now, hey, it's 10 minutes to go 10 miles, and so, hey, maybe my friends are all 10 miles away. And we just, you know, you just have these little totally car-dependent networks, and it's just cut off from geography. So if that's your reason for driving horse and buggy, I do not object to that reason at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a very valid parallel with the internet is, do we value in-person communication?
Yeah.
Getting together, you know, yeah. Like technically speaking, we don't have to be in the same room right now. We could all be at our home offices mm-hmm. having this conversation remotely, but there's value in getting together face to face and having a conversation. And so I think in a parallel way to the Amish deciding to have a very small community, physically speaking, I think we can choose to allow the internet to fragment or to maybe enhance or to complement our real in-person live mm-hmm. communications. Again, I'm overusing this word today, but intentionality.
Yeah. No, I think that's really good, though, because it is so easy to just say, well, this is just too complicated and we'll just figure it out later. Or let's just not worry about it, you know, and that's really easy. That's the easy path. At least initially. Yeah. Well, thanks guys for what you shared. This was really fun. And thanks to whoever left this comment. Hopefully this answered your question if you're able to hear this. And if you got more feedback, always love to hear it. This has been quite the episode. We went everywhere from glass soup to wheels to horse and buggies to putting our heads in the sand and everything else in between and whether we should use a big spoon or a little spoon. So this has been a good one. I feel like I learned a lot and hopefully this was helpful to you listeners. If you're hearing this, that means you're part of our supporters. And that is amazing because the work we do at Anabaptist Perspectives is fully funded by listeners like you or donors who believe in what we're trying to do here. So we do appreciate that. We love to hear feedback from you all. So if you have more topics you would like us to cover in the future, please let us know and we'll catch you in the next episode.